and my father died in 1920. There were five children going to school, so I was the breadwinner. I was the oldest. My two older brothers were married. And mother never worked a day in her life. So it was up to me to put these kids through school. You know, I started to work. I was only 15, so I only had a grammar school education. So anyway, I worked during the day at the tailor shop for the Progress Tailoring Company, and I was getting $1.25 an hour. Now, you couldn't do much with $1.25 an hour in those days. So I got a job as a cashier in the neighborhood theater. So I was working during the day and going to the theater at night to work to support the family. Well, what I earned during the day, I'd give to my mother. What I earned at night was my spending money for clothes and things, you know. So, kids all grew up, got married, went to high school, then got married. My sister worked 2 years and got married, so they weren't really too much help around the house, you know. One brother got married when he was 18. My sister was 18 when she got married. And so I've been supporting my mother ever since. In fact, we live here with my sister, but I pay part of everything they, you know, house. And so I did that for about 7.5 years, working day and night, until I almost got a nervous breakdown, because it wasn't that the work was too hard, but the long hours I was putting in, and I was shaking like that, so the doctor said you either have to quit one job or the other. So that's when I quit my night job, because by that time I was getting more active in the union, and I didn't have time for, you know, night work, because the building was put up and we joined the gym, and that's what really got the activity started. A group of us girls joined the gym that they had down there, and Clara Leon, who was the backbone of the ladies' local. I don't know if you've heard of Clara Leon. Well, she had this group together, and we had a glee club, you know, we'd sing and all that. So we decided, why not have a choir? So through the Women's Trade Union League, we got a teacher for our gym. And Mr. Levin, who was the manager of our union, he had a friend, Dr. Lieberson, who was a very doctor of music. He was a very well professor of music. He came to direct our choir. Well, it started with just girls. And the first year that we went to the convention in Atlantic City, they asked the Chicago Choir to come to sing there. Well, we made such a hit out there that the band all got jealous, and they said they wanted to join the choir. So that's when we we were the first ones that had a choir of all the amalgamated joint boards in Chicago. And then we had a mixed choir, men and women. And it was just out of this world, you know, it was just beautiful. So that started the ball rolling. Then this gym teacher of ours, her name was Judy Ryerson, she was also a dramatic teacher. So we started the dramatic club, and we used to put on plays, you know, with the senior group. From the senior group, then it got to the children. And we put on skits, you know, for Christmas. In fact, my nephew that's now 40 years old, he was Tiny Tim when they had the Christmas play. And so then we started a bowling league. And this all used to come out of Local 275. You know, we talk it over, oh, why don't we do this? Well, we were all younger then, you know, and full of pep. And why don't we do that? And Clara was the type of a person that she could really keep this group together, you know. And the local wasn't very large, as far as women activity, women were concerned, because you see in the shops, some of the chairmen didn't tell the women when they joined the union, well, we have an Italian local, or we have a Bohemian or a Lithuanian or a woman's local. So nobody ever heard of the ladies' local until they come down to the Union Theatre area. But when I was shop chair lady at C.D. Shane, whenever I'd get the woman to join the union after their period of time, you know, and ready for them to join, I'd tell them. I said, now we have Local 39, which is an English-speaking local. We have an Italian local, a Bohemian, Lithuanian, Italian local. What local would you like to belong to? Well, a lot of the women would say, well, what local do you belong to? I'd say, well, I belong to the ladies' local. Well, I want to belong with you. Yeah. So that's how I used to get women into the local. Well, after that, some of our girls become chair ladies in cutting rooms, you know, where they sew the tickets on, you know, and put the thread marks in for the cutters and all that. So they used to all join the ladies' local. That's how we were able to keep our local going. And we used to run a luncheon every year to raise money for the local, to send our delegates to the convention, you know. And we had our own officers, and we belonged to the joint board and all that. But years ago, before we really got that active, we used to go to the Ladies Women's Trade Union League, and we used to participate in some of their activities over there, you know. And of course, with the strikes and trying to organize shops, we were the first ones there to go on the picket line. In fact, we used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be at the picket line and stay there until around 9:30, and then go to work. Then we leave the shop around 3 o'clock to go back to the picket line. So in those days, we didn't get paid for our time that we lost. So we used to lose it out of our own pocket. You know, after all, you're all piecework. So we'd lose all that time, us girls, just to go to the picket line and organize the leather workers and the necktie workers and all those before they even, you know, when they first got organized. So I really don't know. I've had a lot of experiences as far as that's concerned, because I was always active. In fact, after I quit my night job and I could get more active in the ladies' local, then I become an executive board member. From that, I become a vice president of the local. Then they needed a financial secretary when our financial secretary retired on account of ill health. So, being that I had experience handling money and all that, I didn't go to high school or anything, but I was pretty good at figures. They decided, instead of being vice president, I should become financial secretary. So I was elected. So I was financial secretary until I retired. And I also belonged to the joint board for many, many years. I was always re-elected. I was a delegate to the CIO here in Chicago. I was secretary of the choir. I had more titles than you could choose to get, you know. So,
Marie, why was, in your opinion, why was the women's local originally started?
Yeah, local was originally started because the men wouldn't give the women a break. Anytime there was any decisions to make or any place to go, always the men went, never a woman. So Sarah Rosner and Ray, and Sophie Kolbash, and this woman is in California now. I haven't seen her for years. Well, a few of the old timers that were there way before I was. I'm not as old as they are. I didn't really start to join the union until 1919. They decided they were going to take the bull by the horn and start a ladies' local. in order for them to be able to have something to say, you know. And they started the Slavies Local. Well, Sophie Kolbach at that time was chair lady of the shop where I worked, so she came up to me and she said, Marie, we're starting a Ladies Local. She said, would you like to join? Would you like to switch over from Local 39? Well, to me, when I'm 16, 17 years old and I was working day and night, I didn't care what local I belonged to as long as I belonged to the union, you know. So I said, well, I don't care. I says, I'll belong to the local. So she, we switched me from Local 39 to 275. And then we had our own women on the joint board. Of course, I wasn't on the joint board then. And I think I didn't get into the joint board until about the latter part of 1920, you know. Because we didn't have the building. I think the building was put up in 27 or 28, if I'm not mistaken. My memory is not so good. And that's when we really start, you know, get more active, when we had our building put up. Because before, the union office was on Halsted and Van Buren, and it was lousy neighborhood for one thing, and didn't have enough room for anything, you know. And so that's why the Ladies Local really originated, to my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else said anything different, but that was the main purpose, is because the men didn't give the women a break. We had no women's liberation at that time, you know. The men were always the forefront.
Are there any stories or experiences you've had that where you saw that happening, where you weren't getting a break, or some of the women around you weren't?
No.
What specifically?
From the time that I become really active in the local, they were already used to the idea that the women had to get some recognition. The only thing that I remember is when we started the insurance, the Amalgamated Insurance, the women were being discriminated, as far as the money was concerned. The men were getting more than the women were. So, being that I was on the joint board at the time, I got up and I said, I didn't see any sense in that. Because as far as women were concerned, they deserved just as much as the men, if not more. Because a woman works in the shop, she has to come home, make supper, wash the dishes, do the housework, wash clothes, you know, take care of the house. And when a man comes home from work and he sits there, reads the paper and waits, so it's time for supper. And so their excuse was that the women get sick more often than the men did. I said, well, that's why the women get sick more often, because they have all this responsibility, raising the children, working outside and working in the house too. And so they said, well, the women get paid for maternity. I said, well, let the men get a baby. Let them get paid for it. You know, get it. Bickering back and forth. Well, finally they raised it, that the women should get as much as the men did. That was one experience where the women got equal rights, you know. And as far as the shop is concerned, working in the shop, being that we had piecework rates, if a woman was as fast as a man, she could make just as much as he did. And some women were faster than the men, so they made more than the men. You see, we had equal pay for equal work, you know. So that, we never were discriminated in the shop. But most of the men used to get the better jobs, you know, like pocket making and jobs where you can make more money. But that was from the beginning. After that, it was pretty well equalized, you know. But outside of that, I don't remember of women being discriminated too much after we started the local. We were always treated very nice by the other locals. Of course, from the beginning, they kidded us a lot. You know, they used to call us the old maid local, you know, because most of us were not married. They hit us a little bit. But we didn't have too much trouble that I remember. And everything went smoothly. Clara Leon was a very good business agent. She kept... See, I don't remember when Sarah Rosner was a business agent. Because then, on account of her health, she had moved to California, and then we had... Ever since I was active in the local, Clara Leon was the business agent. Mm-hmm. So Sarah Rosner was there before I got real active. I told you I was working in the evening for 7.5 years, and I didn't have time to do too much there. But I personally belonged to all the different activities in the building, took part in everything, and always was well treated by everybody, so I can't kick too much about anything, you know.
Do you think that there were any problems organizing women in Chicago, or?
When I was going out organizing with Talman Dunn, one of our business agents that died, we were organizing the canvas makers at that time. And we, for about 2 weeks, we were picketing these canvas shops, and there was a bunch of women there that were really vicious. They caused everything under the sun. And so then there was quite a few Italian girls that worked there. So he asked me to go with him to visit some of these women in their homes. Well, I remember going to one woman's home, being that I was Italian, he wanted me to, you know, he thought he'd make a better impression to a woman alone. So we went there, and it was raining cats and dogs. So she came to the door, and she wouldn't even let us in the house. We stood outside in the rain, and she would talk to us through the door. Oh, she wasn't interested. No. And boy, we talked the blue streak. In fact, I had a straw hat on because it was in the summertime, and the hat got ruined from the rain. We had no umbrella because it started to rain while we were up. And I was so provoked, you know, thinking that I'm ruining my hat, and here we can't get to first base with her. Well, finally, they organized the shop, and she had to sign up. I'm not going to mention her name, but she became one of the best union members after that. And every time I'd see her, I'd say, doggone it. I said, I ruined a hat just to go and talk to her. I said, and now she, you know. And I reminded her of that one time. So, well, she says, you know, everybody used to tell us, oh, you joined the union, a bunch of gangsters and a bunch of this. Well, anyway, then she was become chair lady in the shop, and she became one of the best union members. She was even on the joint court later on. Then another experience we had was organizing the leather workers.
What do we say?
Oh, gosh, let's see. That must have been in the... Let's see, I worked with Charlie. Yeah. Oh, that must be about 30 years ago. We started organizing the leather workers. And we were picketing a place on 12th Street. And, well, we had a time there, too. They used to come out with nail files and, you know, wanted a... poke us with the files. We were walking up and down, and Agnes and Rose Falk and all of us were there. And that one morning night, I was really mad at this one girl because she was, I'm not going to mention her nationality, but anyway, she was very vicious. So I went to the corner to see her when she got off the streetcar. We had streetcars there. So I'm walking down the street and trying to talk to her, and she called me everything she could think of, you know, and I got burned up, and I gave her a couple of punches, you know, around in the body part. I had nothing on her face, so I wouldn't bruise her, you know. And she started to run down the street and run into the lobby of the building, and they had police out there and everything. And the boss was down there, and so she told him that somebody hit her. So he comes running out with the policeman, and I had a black skirt and a red blouse on. So she says, "That girl with the red blouse." So the policeman called me, you know, "Come over here." So I went up there. And he says, "What's your name?" So I was kind of hesitating. I didn't know if I should give him my right name or not. So under his breath, he'd say, any name, you know. So I gave him a fictitious name. And one of our business agents, he's also dead now, Mac McGilligan, he was walking up and down there, you know, and he says to me, "Well, I'm glad that you got out of that one." So the boss says, "I want her arrested." So the policeman says, "Don't worry, we'll take care of her." So then later on, I asked Mac, I says, "How come I didn't go to jail?" He says, "Oh, they're taken care of. Don't worry about it. Police are taken care of." So that was another experience I had. Then we were trying to organize a little shop, and one of the women that didn't belong to our local and I went there to work, you know, because the shop was closed. They only had a skeleton crew, and they couldn't get to first base with them. So they decided to try to plant somebody in the shop, you know. So we were pretty slow at the place where I work, at C.B. Shane. So they asked me if I would go there to apply for a job. Well, we did. The two of us went to apply there for a job on separate days. I told them that I was a former beauty operator and that I hadn't worked for years, but that I knew how to do all this different thing. They asked me what I could do. I said I could make linings, I can use a padding machine, the different sections that I knew how to work in. And this other girl, when she applied, she told them that she hadn't worked. She was taking care of her sick mother, and she was a sleeve maker and this and that, and different mentions. Oh, they thought, well, that's fine, at least we can get our specials out, you know. So there was maybe about six or seven people working there, you know. Well, we were damaging more than we were accomplishing, you know. Every once in a while, we damaged something so that they couldn't get it out, you know. And, well, who did it? I don't know who did it, you know. Probably in the process, something got damaged. Well, we kept this up for a while, and at the same time, I would go to the washroom and I would pass their shipping room. And they had a partition there, but I could see through the cracks of this partition what was going on in the shipping room. And at lunchtime, I would go to the, it was a station, you know. They tore that down now on Harrison Street and Weld. And I would meet Clara Leon there for lunch. And I would tell her everything that was going on there, and what they shipped out and how they used to ship it out. They used to take it on a different floor and ship it out through the back like it was somebody else's work, you know. And that's how they were getting all the information what was going on inside. And I'd tell them how much work was going out, which was very little. Well, they kept that up for about 2 weeks. But after we were working there about 3 days, and this girl had a car, and she had a car across the street. So the people that were picketing wanted to go and puncture her tires. So she'd pick me up, and we'd drive over there, and the police would escort us across the street, you know. And we'd act like we were so scared, you know, walking through this pit. So one day, one of the men that worked with me at Shane's was picketing there. So when he saw me coming into the building, going into the building, he said, "Clara, I shot you." You know, he got all excited. His shop sherry is stabbing, you know. So she got a hold of him, took him around the corner. She says, "Shut up, you damn fool." She says, "We got her planted in there." He says, "Oh," he says, "I almost gave out the show." He says, So, well, anyway, after we worked there a few more days, somebody, which we had an idea who it was, called up this firm and said, "Those two girls you had working there, He says, our union girl. He says, and they're spying on you. So they called us into the office, and I says, I don't know anything about it, you know. Well, anyway, they were supposed to pay us the regular rate. We weren't piecework. They were paying us so much an hour, you know. I don't remember what the NRA rate was at the time. And they didn't pay us that. So then we brought them up before the NRA board, you know, that they didn't pay us. And they had a trial, and finally he had to give us back pay for those 5 days that we worked there. So that was another experience that I had. And, oh, he was so burned up to think that he had two union people working there, you know, spying on him.
Were you eventually fired?
Oh, yeah, he fired us right away. When he called us in the office, somebody called up and said, you two are union spies, he says. I said, you know, we denied it. But then when we brought him up before the board, and he had appeared, and we had one of our business agents appeared, and our lawyer with us, so then he knew that we actually were union spies.